You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our first Stanley Cup Final edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. Kicking your week off as always. It's Ian Mendes, Haley Salvian with you. Ahead on this podcast, we'll tee up the unlikely Stanley Cup Final matchup and discuss if the underdog Habs can pull off the ultimate upset by taking down the defending Stanley Cup champions from Tampa. Price versus Vasilevsky, Nikita Kucherov's injury status, and can an iconic franchise like the Montreal Canadiens actually be a lovable underdog? We'll hit on all of those themes and more during the show. The guy with the Habs profile pick in his Twitter bio, Dom Luschishin's going to drop by, talk some pre-series analysis there. We'll wrap, of course, with Multiple Choice Madness, and we'll discuss who deserves the Conn Smythe Trophy right now on the day of Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final. But Haley, I think it's really important, and you know, you, myself, and our producer, Chris Filanery, before this show started, we had, a pretty good conversation and a debate as to where we lead or where we put this story. And that story, of course, is I think the biggest story, arguably in the sports world, certainly in the hockey world, Haley, and that is the Chicago Blackhawks and what has transpired with them. And I think it's important. We've made the decision amongst the three of us that, yeah, I think it's important that we lead our podcast off with this particular topic.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, we're about to go into the Stanley Cup Finals, and there's this big matchup that everyone wants to talk about. There's the Cinderella story and the potential for a back-to-back, but I just think all of that pales in comparison to what's been reported with the Chicago Blackhawks story. Some of the details that Katie Strang, Mark Lazarus, and Scott Powers, they've been, you know, their story that came out last week, some of the details that were published are horrifying, for lack of a better word. They're very disturbing. And this is just a really important story, not only because of how horrible the alleged act is, but the also alleged cover-up that we're seeing reported out. And there's just, it's too important to bury in the middle of a show after talking to Dom and, you know, talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs. This is really important. And I think, you know, I'm glad that we're all on the same page that we have to talk about this first.
Yeah. And I think we have to also understand that this is a sport that has dealt with sexual abuse stories in the past, whether it's a scandal involving what went on at Maple Leaf Gardens in the 1970s and 80s, whether it's Graham James and his predatory behavior on young men in the 80s and 90s. And into this is in 2010. This is a systemic problem in hockey. We can't just call it an isolated incident when it has happened over and over in our sport. And we need to take it with the degree of seriousness that it deserves, which is we need to be shining a light on this. And I understand, I know, Haley, I've seen the conversation on Twitter, people saying, this isn't the time. It's the Stanley Cup. I got to tell you, we don't choose when these stories come out, and those victims didn't choose when they were abused.
No.
And we have to, unfortunately, put aside our feelings of, you know, is this overshadowing the Stanley Cup? Damn straight it's overshadowing the Stanley Cup. And that's not our problem. It's It's the story that needs to be told, and we need to give some credit to Rick West, head of TSN, who has done a terrific job in reporting this. As you mentioned, Mark Lazarus, Scott Powers, Katie Strang on our side. And you're starting to see, and this is what happens, Emily Kaplan has started to weigh in from ESPN. This is how journalism works, Haley. As the story breaks initially, and then it becomes a dam that bursts and you can't stop it. And now multiple outlets are reporting on this, and this is the right thing to do. And I think this is going to be interesting because as you and I record this, this podcast on Monday, you know, around 12:30, 1 o'clock Eastern time, on Monday, Gary Bettman is going to get up in front of reporters here at some point on Monday in his annual State of the Union address before the Stanley Cup playoffs. And you just know, Haley, that this topic is going to be broached, and it's going to be very interesting to see the demeanor of Gary Bettman. Does he become aggressive, defensive? Does he brush it off? Is he sympathetic? Gary's a lawyer. Bill Daly's a lawyer.
Very good lawyers.
You saw it in Bill's comment, too, to Katie Strang with The Athletic. Lawyers are, these are the moments that they have the ability to say something without saying anything. And I'm curious to see how this plays out with Gary Bettman on the podium.
Well, it's interesting that you mention Bill Daly because it was one of the things I wanted to raise, too. And I think there's I've seen a lot of comments on social media of people who are really mad about the statement or the lack of statements from other people, the very few comments that we've heard. I will say, you know, this is a legal process. And if it's not right now, it is going to be. I mean, it is a legal process. There's lawsuits. There's ongoing lawsuits right now. The lack of transparency, the lack of comments, like that is, you know, quite normal in terms of a legal, any kind of legal process, any kind of litigation. So I don't think we should be surprised by not hearing much, because when you're in a legal process, you don't want to say anything that's going to impact that. So I will say, you know, when you see somebody say nothing, it doesn't, we shouldn't read too much into it, because it's just typically how litigation works. That's pretty typical. I will say with Bill Daly, I think his words are always very selective. Like, he is a very good and smart lawyer saying there is no ongoing investigation at this time. It actually says a lot. Like you said, he says something without saying anything. So I think that could signal, don't assume that it's not coming. Don't assume that it didn't happen already. Don't assume that, there's something that could be coming in the future. So, and I think on top of Gary Bettman's media availability, we're heading into a time in the league where there's going to be Seattle draft. There's going to be the entry draft. There's going to be free agency. There's going to be a ton of media availabilities for every team in the league, including the Chicago Blackhawks. So there's going to be it's going to be hard to hide from the media in these instances. And I think there's going to be a ton of difficult questions that are sent Stan Bowman and the Chicago Blackhawks way in these availabilities. Like, you can't avoid it. These are major things coming up in the NHL calendar in the next month. And, you know, there's going to need to be some transparency here soon because the allegations and the details that have been published are, like I said, they're horrible. And like you said, there's a history of this stuff happening. I think it's the ugly truths and the dirty little secrets that have been coming up, like Katie Strang's piece with Mark and Scott. The quote from the player said, every single person knew about this. Everybody knew on that Chicago Blackhawks team. And all these details are just coming to light on a national platform now. So that's what I mean when I say these dirty little secrets. They're very troubling, and they can ruin careers and ruin people's lives. And it's going to be interesting. I don't know if interesting is the right word, but I mean, it's going to be, we're going to have to just wait and see how this all plays out. But I really commend, Katie always does a great job. Katie isn't, I have all the time in the world for Katie Strang. But I do think Mark and Scott deserve a ton of credit. It's not easy to be beat reporters and try to cover something like this. It's very easy as a beat writer to say, oh, but I need the access and I've got to see these guys next year when the room opens. I've got to talk to Bowman. I've got to talk to the media relations people. I don't want to get my hands dirty. And they dove into this with Katie. And I think that deserves a ton of credit because it's very easy to say, let's just let somebody national do it so we can keep our hands clean of this when we go back into the room.
Yeah, it's you're right. And this is not a story that's going to go away. And I think, Haley, when Mark Bergevin spoke on Sunday, so you talk about this cycle of media availabilities that are coming with Seattle and the draft and free agency. It kind of kicked off this weekend when Mark Bergevin, who was the director of player personnel with Chicago at the time, was asked point blank about this and by Katie Strang in the Zoom press conference. And Bergevin essentially said, look, I didn't know about any meeting. I was not made aware of what was going on there. And you can take my answer and take it on the record. And I have a hard time believing him, but only because you hear the other people in the Blackhawks organization that have been willing to speak on the condition of anonymity saying, nah, it was an open secret and everybody knew. Yeah. So I think what needs to happen here, and I'm glad, as you said, Mark Lazarus reporting earlier today that an independent investigation has been launched. They'll look into this. The key thing, and this is kind of, this is the standard question, right, that gets asked, Haley, anytime that there's a scandal or a crime, it's the what did you know and when did you know it? That's it. Those are the two questions that really need to be asked, right?
Yeah.
What did you know and when did you know it? And once those two things are established, then you start to ask the questions of why didn't you run this up the proper, you know, protocol chain to have this addressed? How on earth could you live with yourself as an adult? Like, here's my point too. I know there's going to be some people saying, you know, where was Jonathan Toews and where was, you know, those are young men in their 20s. I don't expect them to be the ones to be the whistleblowers, but there were some bloody adults in the room, men in their 30s and 40s and 50s that let that go. And shame on them. Shame on them for that. This isn't on the players. Those are young men that, you know, they're just learning their way in their 20s. But those men who've been around in their 30s and 40s, like, it's inexcusable that you would have allowed that guy to go on and have other victims when you damn well knew what he was all about.
Yeah, and I think part of the most troubling pieces of these allegations in the story, and Ian and I did discuss, you know, we're not going, there are plenty of trigger warnings in this discussion if we didn't already say that. But if you're going to go ahead and read the piece and read these allegations, we recommend that you do. But, you know, one of the things that came out in the story was, you know, the skills coach, Paul Vincent, was the one that was told about what happened. And, you know, everything that I've listened to about this and read about this, everyone's quite bullish on the fact that Paul went up the totem pole. He told the president, the GM, the vice president, he told them to report it to the police, and they were told no. No, we wouldn't. And, you know, I think, you know, maybe there wasn't a veteran in the room who did something about it, but you had this coach who believed the players, who did the right steps and was told, no, we're not going to report it to police. Again, this is a legal matter, so we will say allegedly. That's allegedly what happened here. And if that's true, there's not enough words to describe how problematic that is.
Yeah, and like you said, Haley, this is certainly a story that we'll just simply have to monitor here as the next couple of weeks unfold.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
All right, Haley, all eyes of the hockey world on the ice, I think, certainly on Tampa in game one of the Stanley Cup final tonight. A Stanley Cup final nobody could have predicted a few weeks ago, the Montreal Canadiens and the Tampa Bay Lightning hooking up. Now, here's my question to you, because in pro sports, Haley, there's a handful of like iconic teams, right? Like the Boston Celtics or the Dallas Cowboys. Montreal Canadiens, New York Yankees, Toronto Maple Leafs, they're these iconic franchises, and they've got such a big following, it's almost impossible for an iconic franchise to be a lovable underdog. And yet, here we are. So here's my, I guess, hypothesis or theory, whatever. Like, can the Montreal Canadiens be a lovable underdog? I don't know why I keep having a hard time saying lovable underdog. Lovable underdog. Can the Montreal Canadiens be a lovable underdog, Haley?
If you would have asked me this question at the start of the playoffs, I probably would have said no. But everything we've seen, they're really likable, and it's annoying. Arpin posted another thing about Philip Deneau bringing pizza out post game, and he brought a slice for Cole Caulfield, and then they had this like little hug moment, and I said to Arpin, like, stop making them so likable. It's really bothering me because you've got the Phil Deneau with his pizza and you've got Cole Caulfield and J.J. Watt, their connection there, which makes it kind of fun. And I mean, in between jokes of Cole Caulfield being 4'9" and 12 years old, he scored 4 goals and 1 assist against Vegas. And you've got Carey Price, who's been incredibly sharp. And I think there's a ton of people who are rooting for Carey Price to win a Stanley Cup. He's a really likable guy. And then you've also got him post-game talking to Kyle Bukauskas, who we both know well from Ottawa and at Sportsnet, shouting out his mom for you know, being reelected as chief, which is great. I mean, you just won and you're going to the Stanley Cup final, and he's talking about his mom and his dad being in the stands and talking about family. So, there's just a ton, and Mark Bergevin's red suit. I think there's just, you know, weirdly a lot of things that make this Habs team really likable. And it's kind of annoying because they are an iconic franchise. Like, this isn't just some, you know, franchise who's just come up through nothing and, hey, we made the Stanley Cup final. It's not the same as, I'm drawing a blank on who could be an example of that. But you know, they are quite likable.
Yeah. And, you know, just to add to that and to just, you know, not, and I'm not trying, and I'm being serious when I say that, I'm not trying to promote, like do some self-promotion here, but I did just drop a piece today on Luke Richardson and,
yes,
and Stephanie Richardson.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, Haley, I had a tough weekend. You know what? I feel like I can tell you this. I had a tough weekend. Writing that story, talking to Stephanie Richardson, I spent about 90 minutes on the phone with Steph, and she's great. I've known her a long time, and we talked about DIFD, and I told her, look, I want to do you some justice. I want to do DIFD some justice. And I got off the phone, and I went over to talk to my wife about the story. I just broke down, and I'm bawling. And it's just, I can't help but think that the hockey gods are smiling on the Richardson family and all the journey that they've been on. To connect with some people that are close to them, to talk to them about what this has meant for them. And you just, you know what? I believe in karma. And I believe the Montreal Canadiens can win the Stanley Cup because of that. And I just, boy, it's almost impossible to think that the Montreal Canadiens could be lovable. But I guess my point is, I'm encouraging people to read my story, not because I wrote it, but because I think you need to read it, because it's not about me. It's about Luke and Steph and Darren and Morgan. And it's impossible. I challenge you to read that story and come out of it and not be cheering for Luke Richardson and the Montreal Canadiens. I defy you to do it. Yeah. I think even Tampa Bay Lightning fans would be like, oh, wow. Like, it's hard not to cheer for them. So what they've done for mental health, for youth in our country and in North America, I kind of feel like it's okay to cheer for them, even though that they're the hated Montreal Canadiens.
Mm-hmm. Well, because there's being a hockey fan and being a parent.
Yeah.
Right? And I think when you read that story, and it's so beautifully written, Ian, like, you weren't just looking for a story to do. Like, let's get some subscriptions. Let's get some attention on my story. Like, you were doing this beautiful family. You know, you were telling their story in a very respectful and in a great way. So I do recommend people do that as well. And I think that's just another piece of it that makes it so easy to root for Montreal right now. And it just seems so weird to say that. But yeah, I can't believe I didn't even bring up Luke Richardson because we spoke about it last week too. And that's probably at the forefront of what makes them this team that they're easy to cheer for.
Yeah.
And I will say, because part of that is the underdog nature of the Habs, I think at some point we need to stop calling this a Cinderella run and start just saying, hey, the Montreal Canadiens deserve to be here. You know, at some point it's not a Cinderella underdog run. They've won three playoff rounds. They're in the Stanley Cup final, and they did that with good goal scorers, with Carey Price playing really well, a defensive center in Deneau who's had a great series. They're on an 11-2 run since falling behind 3-1 versus Toronto. Like, I think we're past the time of talking about Cinderella story, glitter, dust, miraculous run to the final, and just respect the fact that, and Arpin talked about this last week when he was on, this team was always going to be better built for the Stanley Cup playoffs. And we're seeing that. And, you know, this isn't just some crazy run anymore. This is just a team that's played really well, and now they're in the Cup final.
You know, and Haley, we'll bring Dom Lucician in here to talk all about, you know, the kind of some of the underlying numbers. And Dom's got some great stuff to talk about with that. You talk about that pixie dust, fairy dust stuff. Dom's got a pretty cool stat on that, the Habs being underdogs. Here's my question for you. If you're John Cooper in the Lightning going into game one tonight, we know Nikita Kucherov is banged up. He took that Mayfield cross check to the, I think it's the ribs, lower back, whatever. Mm-hmm. He didn't look right in game seven. If you're Tampa, do you leave Nikita Kucherov out of the lineup for game one? Just, hey, rest up, man. If we lose, come back for game two. And if you're not 100%, if we win, hey, it's all good. Maybe you just wait till you're 100%. Like, what would you do? Or do you just say, hey, it's Stanley Cup final. This guy's the leading playoff scorer. If you're like, if we can duct tape you together, you're going to play.
Well, it's so difficult because, you know, post game or a couple days after the game, I don't have the exact date in front of me, but Kucherov was asked about it and he was like, there was no injury.
Yeah.
So it's hard because when at the end of the day, I think a lot of these players make the decisions for themselves. And I don't know if Nikita Kucherov would allow the Tampa Bay Lightning to say, hey, maybe you sit out game one. I mean, we see it with goaltenders. We saw it with Robin Leonard starting game one against the Avs and saying we're going to give Fleury a rest because he's played a lot. So, I mean, we don't see it as often with skaters. Obviously, it's a little bit different because you can just put Robin Leonard in over Marc-Andre Fleury. I don't think you have a replacement for Nikita Kucherov in the role he plays and how important it is. So it's tough because I think game one, you want to set the tone for the series and you want to make a statement. You know, game one of the Stanley Cup final is, it's not a do or die game, but it's very important. So you probably want your best player there. But I think that Montreal is a really tough team. They are very defensively structured. They play very disciplined hockey. But I think they're pretty physical too. So do you want Nikita Kucherov to take a hit from Shea Weber or from Corey Perry and be out for the rest of the series?
Nasty stick work from Corey Perry. Yeah. I can see it now. Or Shea Weber. You're right. If you're the Habs.
And do you want to risk that?
Yeah, I think it's a great debate that must be going on with Julien Brisebois, John Cooper, Nikita Kucherov, and whoever else might be in that kind of inner sanctum of decision-making. Because I think there's an argument to be made. Leave him out for game one.
Yeah. And look, I think if, and people, I want to be careful with this because I'm not saying that the Habs are going to be dirty. But I think that if you're the Montreal Canadiens and Nikita Kucherov's in this series and you know that he's hurting and you know that he's coming off hip surgery, you're going to give him the extra shots. They're going to.
Totally.
They're going to be all over him. It's just the way that it is in the playoffs. You know, again, I talk about the Flames because it's the team I cover. But, you know, in the playoffs, people go at Johnny Gaudreau. They just do. Because it's not because of an injury, but he's a smaller guy. He's super skilled. Let's just grind him. Let's just hit him every second chance we have, every time. He's on the ice. Hit him.
Totally.
And if you're the Habs, aren't you going to do that to Nikita Kucherov? Because I think he is – Braden Point's been incredible. Vasilevskiy, incredible. You have Steven Stamkos, too. You have Victor Hedman. You have so many pieces. But Nikita Kucherov's really important to what Tampa Bay does. And if you're in Montreal and you have an opportunity to get him off his game, give him a couple shots, aren't you going to do it? It's tough. I don't know. I think in terms of player safety and health and safe, like in health and the well-being of a player, life after hockey, that part of me says maybe don't play him game one, but it's the playoffs and I think the chances of him not being in are pretty slim.
All right, Haley, time for us to bring in somebody who I thought was an exclusive guest with you and I, right? Weren't you under the impression, Haley, that Dom Luschishin was our guy? Like, Dom, we did the Dom Dumber Dumbest thing. He's like the Monday guy. We had this great little vibe going. Now we find out he's kind of going behind our back. He's cheating on us with the Tuesday guys tomorrow on the American show. How are you feeling about this, Haley?
I'm personally devastated. I was under the impression that Dom was a Monday guest. We had our segments. We had so much fun. And now he's just going on the American show. And I don't really understand why. So let's bring him in to ask.
Let's
Dom.
Bring him in to ask why he would stab us in the back like this right at the start of the Stanley Cup final. Dom, walk us through how these guys, did they not realize that you had an exclusive deal with us? Do you not care about us? What happened?
Well, here is the deal. I'm here every seventh Monday or whatever. Not a huge commitment. I don't feel any loyalty to me on this show where I don't have a regular time slot. I don't have a regular guest appearance. It's just whenever you have space to fill, let's call Dom because he's available. I remember, I think week one of this show, Haley called me a backup plan to a guest. And ever since then, I've just not felt... I don't feel the loyalty that you guys think I should feel. And every week I have power rankings with Sean Gentile and we have a rapport. And from that, I make power rankings of my favorite athletic colleagues.
Don't.
And at the moment, because I work with him every Friday, writing the power rankings and having a lot of fun, he's got to be up there. And when he says, do you want to come on the show? Even though I hate podcasts so much, and this is a favor to you guys because I hate them so much, I still would never say no to Sean because he's my boy and we've been through so much with these power rankings.
We'll let you do the power rankings with him tomorrow because that was a lot of fun, right? You guys worked in the movie characters. That is perfect. We'll leave that alone for your Tuesday show, okay? Mm-hmm. We'll leave that alone. But Haley and I want to really talk to you about the Stanley Cup final here. I know you're gritting your teeth apparently doing this podcast, but hopefully you can power through it. What I really loved about your latest piece looking at the Stanley Cup final, Dom, is if you could walk our listeners through, and I won't spoil it, you can tell them because you did the research and I think this is really cool, but the Montreal Canadiens' ability to kind of punch above their weight when they are staggering underdogs. Can you walk our listeners through for a little context what kind of black magic or whatever the Habs are doing here? Just explain to them what's going on here.
Yeah, for sure. Before I get to that, though, I want to point out that I feel a lot better about the Habs getting this far after seeing a TikTok of Jay Baruchel and his reaction to the Habs making the final because it was one of the most wholesome things I've ever seen. And I love Jay, love a lot of the movies he's in. And seeing him that happy, it made me jealous, obviously, because I want that same happiness. But it was so pure that I can only be happy for the guy that he finally has this for himself. And it's because Montreal is a... they have dark magic when it comes to providing chaos for the league. And when you think they don't have much of a chance, they find a way. They always find a way. And last year, during the first COVID lockdown, I went through the last decade of playoff series and like reran my model to show like what it would have said at the time. And that gave me like a historical, I guess, database of what the series probabilities were for each series since 2010. And Montreal has been an underdog with a chance to win at under 25% four times now. 2010 against Washington, they won. 2014 against Boston, they won. 2021 against Toronto, they won. And 2021 against Vegas, they won again. So they're 4-0. And if that is the only info you have, you might say the model is broken, obviously, because they clearly didn't have a 25% chance. They won 4-4. It's the fact that the rest of the league is 2-18, winning 10% of the time. So no one else can do it, but Montreal seems to have mastered it.
And sorry, I've got to say, Ian, do we want to tell him?
Oh my gosh, you tell him.
So, hate to break it to you. Jay Baruchel was our first call this week. Mm-hmm. And you were the backup.
This is what I mean. This is why I'm on. This is why I'm going on the Tuesday show. I might never come
Ian's
back.
Ian's like wheezing. Like, it's not even a laugh. There's just air coming out.
Well, I'm laughing
when,
because...
When you said Jay, I was like...
Well, he brought up Jay Baruchel, which is like... I texted the group, Chris, our producer, and Haley. I said, I think we need to come
Do
clean.
Do we tell him?
Yeah, I think we need to tell him.
Okay, but Dom, you have to like take something out of the fact that you're a backup for Kyle Dubas and Jay Baruchel.
I mean, yeah.
It's not like we're calling you if like Arpin... ghosts us or like I don't know why I said Arpin. We had him on 2 weeks
really
ago too.
Mean.
Yeah. He's great. No.
Arpin is so high up the Athletic power rankings.
He really is. He's yeah. awesome. But I just mean it's not like just somebody from the Athletic that we're going to after.
I love the lengths you're going to here to make me feel better by throwing everyone else at the Athletic under the bus.
Yeah. I'll name everyone. I've already picked a fight. Picked a fight? Oh God. English is hard on a Monday. I've already started fights with so many people through this podcast, and I know that they aren't listening to the podcast because nobody has said anything to me about it. So it's fine. This is kind of my stomping ground. Mm-hmm. Air out all my grievances. But no, it's just as an aside, we had to tell you that we wanted Jay Baruchel because we too think it's awesome. His reactions on social media, everything. Mm-hmm. He's been very excited, and of course, we're all happy for him. But going back to the Montreal Canadiens, and you mentioned, you know, the model and how they've been underdogs. Can you maybe explain where your model maybe underestimated the Canadiens?
Yeah. So when you are writing 8 series previews before round one, and they're all 3,500 words each, it is sometimes a bit difficult to get every single detail, and I think I did a decent job, but after posting the Leafs-Habs one, and I don't know why I didn't know better because it was a series involving the Leafs, but for some reason I didn't look too much into how Montreal's expected win percentage changed over the last few weeks, and I know my model used to love them, but I for whatever reason, ignored that while I was writing. And I got a friendly message from Pierre Lebrun, who I love dearly. And he said, loved your piece, but I think you're underestimating the Habs a bit. I think with the compressed schedule, they couldn't play at their best. And the outbreak really affected them. And I think we're going to see a much better team. And that is exactly what we've seen. Once they got, I think, a week's rest between the regular season and the playoffs, they were much more formidable. They looked much closer to the team we saw at the start of the season, where some reporters were calling them a juggernaut. And we're finally seeing that manifest in these playoffs. And I posted a chart in my series preview showing how the model viewed each team, Tampa Bay and Montreal, throughout the season. And Montreal just had so much variability between looking like an almost contender and looking like a mediocre team. And the reason my model underestimated them is because it looks at them at the end of the season. Whereas if I took an average of how they look throughout the year, which may have been more appropriate in this crazy pandemic world, it would have liked the team a lot more.
Well, it's interesting because the end of the season, we saw the Montreal Canadiens essentially leaving the door open for so long for the Calgary Flames to sneak into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Because Calgary was matching up really well against them, because they had that really condensed schedule. So it's really interesting. I think it's a lot of the recency bias and watching the Habs just barely squeak through. But then they had that rest. And then obviously they've looked like a completely different team.
Mm-hmm. And they won not even half their games this year.
Calgary won more games in regulation than Montreal.
Yeah. And I think that speaks to the North Division and how everyone seemed to pile on and say it was the worst division. And I genuinely think that's because a lot of people didn't want to give any credit to Toronto. And anytime Toronto was winning, it'd be like, all these teams are garbage. That's why. Mm-hmm. And if Toronto slumped, it's like all these teams are picking it up. And I think the main thing is that there were a lot of good teams and a flawed contender and no truly bad teams. And because there's only seven, it made sort of this weird dynamic where anyone can be anyone. And that's not something you saw in the West Division, where there were two elite teams, a strong Minnesota team, and then five mediocre or absolutely terrible teams. In the East and Central, there were terrible teams. In the North, there was a seemingly scrappy Ottawa team that, once they got out of their early season funk, were a lot stronger than a lot of people gave them credit for.
And the thing too with Montreal is, I mean, they picked up, I don't have it right in front of me, but I believe they picked up 11 extra points in overtime, which I think just speaks to their ability to just push things to overtime and get that extra point. And ultimately that's what kind of squeaked them in as that fourth seed. They just got more points than Calgary did. So
that's the other thing with, we always call it the loser point, but how much better would Montreal look if they picked up a few overtime wins instead of going like 1-11 or whatever their record was. And that's not something you see in the playoffs, because we don't play 3-on-3. We play 5-on-5. And Montreal, for the majority of the year, was one of the strongest 5-on-5 teams in the league. And their biggest issue was overtime and special teams. And they had one of the worst penalty kills in the entire league. And then come playoff time, it is historically one of the best. So that's the biggest reason they're here. There's a lot of credit to Carey Price for how strong that penalty kill is. But also, if you just watch the penalty kill, it's been very frustrating for Vegas, Winnipeg, and Toronto to beat it.
And yeah, I think for a lot of people, as they look at this series, is that really what this is going to come down to? Like, I look at if the Montreal Canadiens, Dom, can stay out of the penalty box, is that how you envision them basically winning this series? That if they can keep it 5-on-5 and keep that potent lightning power play off the ice, they've got a chance here?
Yeah, I think the thing is that Tampa Bay's power play has been as good as Montreal's penalty kill, which is crazy to think about considering how poor Montreal's penalty kill was during the regular season. And given that, I think it's safer to assume Tampa Bay can keep playing at this level, whereas Montreal might see some penalty kill regression, especially because Tampa Bay is the best power play they've seen. Vegas's power play sucked all season. Toronto sucked for half the season. Winnipeg was at without Scheifele. So it might be a thing where their penalty kill was so good partly because of the teams they're playing, and Tampa Bay will be a real challenge there. At 5-on-5, I think Montreal can hang with Tampa and get as many chances. It's just a matter of whether they can beat Vasilevsky more than Tampa can beat Price.
You know, I think that whole Vasilevsky Price thing, to me, like, does this ultimately become a referendum on who's the best goalie on the planet?
I don't know. And I don't know if I'm the person to ask, because before the playoffs started, I talked a lot of shit about Price because he looked washed up. And I guess some extra rest did him real well, and just the elevated stage of being in the playoffs put him right back on his MVP level. Like, he's playing at the exact same high level he was at when he won the MVP. And that was difficult to expect if all you knew were his numbers over the past three seasons, but not if you knew his name was Carey Price. So it's a weird dynamic that way, but Vasilevsky has been arguably even better during these playoffs because Tampa Bay plays a bit faster and looser with their style. Vasilevsky is left hung out to dry a bit more than Price is because Montreal has been so structured in front of him. So I'm not sure any seven-game series is a referendum for literally anything, and I don't think it'll be for best goalie either, especially since I still would like to see Price do this over a full season. And I'm not saying he can't, because around this time last year, Marc-Andre Fleury had similarly poor numbers over the past couple seasons and put in a Vezina-caliber season the very next year. So wouldn't be surprised to see Price do the same, especially after this run, but I would like to see him have a more prolonged stretch before giving him that title again.
And Dom, taking everything you learned about their underdog status, your model, even just watching all of the games, do you have a Stanley Cup final prediction?
I think it's in Montreal's best interest for me to just continue railing against them and not saying nice things. And I think they were happy to see they were once again under 25% by my model. And I bet against Montreal in the first round. I bet on them in the second round. And then in the third round, I bet a couple games on them, but not too many. I thought Vegas was a bit overrated. But in this one, I did bet on Tampa. And I bet on Tampa in 4, 5, and not 7. So as long as they win 4, 5, or 6, it's a good bet. So you know Montreal saying this is 7. That's the prediction right now. Okay. And I will take Tampa.
Okay, I like that. And your Twitter profile pic is still
The
Habs, right? Like, you never would have thought in your wildest dreams it would be we'd be into July and you'd be doing this.
God.
How'd you do that? Was it a bet that you lost?
It was a bet with Alex Moretto of The Score. We have a little betting group chat with him, Todd Cordell, and Rob Pizzola. And the three of us are all from Toronto, and he is a big Habs fan. And the bet was just change your name. But because Toronto was such heavy favorites, the punishment for me had to have been tougher than it would be for him. So I offered up. I was nice enough to say until they're out, but in this case, it's until the playoffs are over, because if they win the cup, I'm taking it down. I don't care. There's no way I'm keeping it until they're eliminated. But I didn't expect them to lose to the Leafs. And once again, that team has disappointed me to no end.
Well, listen, as we wrap up here, I want to ask you, look, the narrative was talked about all season long, right? The North Division's weak. And look, if we end up going back to what we think the divisions are going to be, the two teams in the Stanley Cup Final, Dom, are in the same division, right? The Atlantic Division. So as you project ahead the next year and you were to power rank the divisions, is the Atlantic the strongest one? Is it the Metro? Is there a case for the Central? Like, as you look at those three divisions, because I think those would be the ones that people would make a case for, Montreal, Tampa, and the Stanley Cup, does that alter the way we should view the Atlantic Division next season?
I've said the Atlantic is the strongest for years, and I have pointed out many times that if Toronto and Vegas switch places, the narratives around both teams would be so different, because Vegas has, for the past couple of years, no contenders to actually play against in the Pacific. And Toronto would always play Boston in the first round. And like, no wonder they can't get out of the first round. Boston's an elite team. That theory sort of goes out the window when you can't beat Columbus or Montreal either. And it's clearly something between the ears with that team. But at the same time, this is a division with Tampa, Boston, Toronto, Florida now, Montreal. Can make a case that Ottawa's a team on the rise. Detroit's a team on the rise. Buffalo exists. It's going to be a tough division. And I wouldn't be surprised to see all five of those teams make the playoffs, because I think the East is a bit overrated and a lot of older teams, but it'll be a gauntlet for sure.
Awesome stuff. Hey, listen, Dom, we appreciate the once every 7 week visit here with Haley and I on Mondays. We look forward to seeing how you run us on the Tuesday show with the Gentile and Custance. But I don't know, are you going to wear like do you wear like a Canadian t-shirt, or do you just lead into the American thing with like a bald eagle t-shirt? Like, what are you doing here?
I got to look into my closet to see what I have. I think I got to lean into the American show. I'll practice my best New York accent, maybe. Really try to not sound Canadian.
Let's work on it right
now.
Can
we workshop that? Yeah.
Yeah, let's workshop that right now.
Or can you do like... You guys don't get that. The Tuesday show might.
Can you do like a Boston? Can you do a Boston accent?
I need to YouTube what Boston accents sound like, because I forgot. I have that commercial in my mind. I don't know. I think it was a Super Bowl commercial with John
Evans.
Chris Evans, John Krasinski, and Rachel Dratch.
Yeah.
One of the best commercials I've ever seen in my life. So I might just...
Study that one.
Study that and get ready for the America show, because the Canada show does not deserve that.
Okay. Excellent stuff. Listen, thanks again for the visit. And like I said, we look forward to hearing you on the Tuesday show. Thanks for this, and enjoy the Stanley Cup final, Dom.
Thanks for having me, guys.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. When you're trying to grow a business, the caliber of person you bring in to help you do that is really important. And LinkedIn makes it really easy to interview the right people for the role, quality people. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/NHL show. That's linkedin.com/NHL show to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
All right. Actually, truth be told, Haley, are you actually going to listen to Dom cheating on us on the other show on Tuesday?
No. I'm on vacation this week. I'm not going to spend my week off listening to Dom do that to us.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, time for us to wrap up the show, as we always do on a Monday, Haley, with a little multiple choice madness. In fact, we kind of asked this question to Dom, that whether or not the Stanley Cup final would be a referendum on who's the best goalie on the planet. So I'm going to ask you, Haley, you got a game to win tonight. Who's your goalie, Haley? Is it A, Andre Vasilevsky of the Tampa Bay Lightning, or B, Carey Price of the Montreal Canadiens?
It's such a tough one, because Vasilevsky, we saw that incredible statistic. He's 4-0, or he's won four straight in game sevens or decisive games. He's got four straight shutouts, I think, in decisive series-winning games. Yeah, which is so clutch. And there's the stats and the eye test and everything that backs that up. But then you have Carey Price, who has been so sharp, and he just has this reputation. We do the my dog just like catapulted himself off the couch. I don't know if you could hear that. Very loud, very chunky. But Carey Price just has this reputation. And we do those player polls all the time at The Athletic, and we ask the players. We ask almost all the players in the league, game seven, who do you want to win you the Stanley Cup? And they all pick Carey Price. So I think there's just something there where everyone just thinks, if I've got to win a game, I want Carey. So it's a really tough one for me. Honestly, I would be totally fine with either of them in a game seven, but I think that statistic just really speaks volumes. So I'm going to go against my gut, which is Carey Price, and I'm going to say Andrei Vasilevskiy.
Yeah. You know what I love about these two goalies too, Haley? I think it's a great contrast in styles. You have the cool, calm, like, hey, is this guy's heart rate even moving?
Yeah.
And Carey Price.
I know.
And then you have this super athletic, dynamic, almost, I'm going to use the word explosive, which I know sounds funny for a goalie, but that's what it is with Vasilevskiy. I'll tell you though, Haley,
I want Carey Price. I'm waffling.
I think I'm going to go Carey Price because I think what I love, and you watch him do those post-game interviews with our pal, you and I know Kyle Bukauskas so well from Sportsnet, and, and you know, Kyle asks these great questions, and Carey just gives him these kind of very monotone. It's just, you know what it is? I think Carey Price just exudes this calmness that I think I would want for my team. So I'll take Carey Price, but I don't think that there's a wrong answer. And I think this is going to be super fun to watch this contrast.
I say Vasilevskiy, but like, I also say Carey, I want Carey Price, honestly. Like everything that you just said, it's just, it's really hard to say you want anyone else, despite the statistics that back up why you should take somebody else. It's that weird thing we talked about with Arpin, the reputation versus the execution. And it's just, there's something about Carey Price that you just feel like you can't not have him there.
All right. Question number two in a multiple choice madness, Haley, it was Pierre LeBrun who had this earlier this week or late last week, I should say, that all signs point to John Cooper going to be the head coach of Team Canada at the Olympics. Haley, if you had your choice, who would be behind the bench for Team Canada at the Olympics? Would it be A, John Cooper, B, Barry Trotz, C, Joel Quenneville, or D, I'll allow us to go completely off the board. I'll go first on this one. I am torn on this one because I think you can make a case for all three of those guys, Cooper, Trotz, and Quenneville. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go Barry Trotz. And I know that it might sound counterintuitive because I think when you think of Trotz, you think of a coach who does really good work with kind of a – like, I always joke that, hey, if you got Barry Trotz to coach, like, Latvia, look out, because it would be problematic, right? They play this super tight system. But yeah. I truly believe, if you ask me, who's the best coach in hockey? I think the answer for me is Barry Trotz. And so I have a hard time not picking the guy who I think is the best coach to be the coach for Team Canada. So I'm going Barry Trotz. What about you?
What about Rod Brind'Amour?
Yeah, well, exactly. That's the D, somebody else.
Yeah, like I think John Cooper is a great option. Barry Trotz is a great option. Q is an amazing option. But everything that I hear about Rod Brind'Amour just makes me, he's so likable. The community feel that he has in the locker room, the way that he coaches, there's just something there with Rod Brind'Amour too that when you said, you know, somebody else, he came up right away. So, I mean, you can't go wrong with any of them, but I would like to see Rod Brind'Amour in that conversation. So I'm going to go with him, and he just won Coach of the Year this year too. So, maybe that's a bit of a cop out saying somebody else Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say Rod.
Okay. I like it. Okay. Next question. This is being recorded just before game one of the Stanley Cup final. But if you got a vote right now, Haley. There's only two teams left standing, so I would assume the Conn Smythe race is really down to just a couple of guys. Who gets Haley Salvian's Conn Smythe vote right now? Is it A, Carey Price, B, Braden Point, or C, Nikita Kucherov? Now, I am keeping Vasilevskiy out of it. If you really think that Vasilevskiy deserves consideration, go for it. I get the sense most people feel like it's Point is the best candidate from Tampa, but Haley, who gets your Conn Smythe trophy vote right now?
Probably Carey Price. I think he's probably been the single biggest engine for the Montreal Canadiens. They've had a ton of things going well for them. They have this young contingent who's playing great, you know, Nick Suzuki, Cole Caulfield. And we've talked about this all already throughout the show. But I think if you had to pinpoint one thing that's been going so well for the Canadiens, it has to be Carey Price for me. Obviously, if Tampa does win, it's probably not going to be Carey Price. But I think that if Montreal is the one that actually wins the Stanley Cup, I think Carey Price should be the one to lift the Conn Smythe.
Ooh, it's hard to boy, it's hard to go on this one and not go with Braden Point, because mm-hmm. nine straight games with a goal, like this is unheard of in, you know, you think about it, the Gretzky never did this. Mike Bossy never did this. Mario Lemieux never did it. Braden mm-hmm. Point's got nine straight games with a goal. Like, this is unheard of. So I think it's pretty much a two-horse race now between Braden Point and Carey Price, but I would go with that. I just don't know how you can't pick a guy who has a goal in nine straight games. So I'll go Braden Point.
Especially if Tampa Bay wins. Like, if Tampa wins, it's going to be Braden Point. But I think if Montreal wins, I don't know if they will say that Braden Point is the Conn Smythe winner if they, in fact, lose in the cup final and Carey Price stands on his head. It's a tough one to answer when we don't know what's going on in the series.
Okay, last one for us to tackle here. I saw some rumblings on the weekend that the New York Islanders' new arena in Belmont mm-hmm. Haley may not be ready right for October. Like, it might be ready in November. Like, they might have to wait a couple of weeks before they play there. So if that scenario unfolds and the Islanders can't start the season at Belmont right away, what should they do? Is it A, play some games at the old Coliseum, give it the old farewell salute, see you later, and then just go back and play games at Belmont when it's ready? So maybe you play the first four or five games at the Coliseum. Or B, play the first couple of weeks on the road until that new rink is ready. That way, the last game and the last memory ever inside the Coliseum is a Game 6 overtime winning goal from Anthony Beauvillier in the conference final. So I'm torn on this because I do think that the greatest moment ever in that building is the Islanders winning a Stanley Cup in a Game 6 overtime with Bob Nystrom back in the day. So I think there's this wonderful symmetry of your most famous iconic game is a Game 6 overtime. Your last game is a Game 6 overtime. However, what I love about the idea of them playing a few games at the Coliseum, this gives you a chance to do a proper goodbye. You can't do that in the playoffs because you never know when the last game is going to be, right? You can't have mm-hmm. this big pomp and circumstance ceremony and here comes Mike Bossy and Dennis Potvin and Billy Smith and, you know, whoever, Zygmunt Palfy, whoever you want to bring in there. You can't do it. But maybe this is your way of people can come back to the Coliseum one last time and say goodbye to the place. So I'm going to say if they can play a few more games at the Coliseum for a proper goodbye, I say go for it.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. I think, like, initially when I see the question, I hear it from you, I think, oh, well, you want to go out with that amazing memory because you don't know what's going to happen when you start the season. But I think you're right. I think being able to have a couple of games there allows you to have a proper goodbye and have that send off. It could almost be like a, you know, when they have the banner raising ceremonies and stuff like that, you know, it'll allow you to maybe do something a little bit more, not just for the organization and the team and the former players, but for the fan base. And, you know, it would be an interesting question to ask Islanders fans. What would you want to do? Do you want to go off with that memory or do you want to come back a few more times and have a proper goodbye and a proper send off? But I'm leaning towards the latter there.
Well, yeah, it's a great memory. I think Islanders fans will have either way of that, that Game 6. It's just too bad for them. They couldn't pull it off in Game 7. All right, Haley, that does it for this edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. So we gotta open up the eyes of the listeners here, or the ears of the listeners, and let them know you're actually on vacation this week, Haley. You're stepping in and working when you're on vacation. So I need to know, and the listeners need to know, what's on the vacation agenda. It's Canada Day up here north of the border on Thursday, July the 1st. What's on the docket for Haley Salvian on her week off?
I have nothing on the docket. I tweeted something the other day that I'd basically just been watching Gossip Girl because that's my comfort show. Gossip Girl, New Girl, Brooklyn Nine-Nine are my comforts. I just rewatch them all the time. So I don't know. This season has been particularly interesting and difficult. The move across the country, the pandemic, not having the access, being on a new beat with all those different things. So I think I'm just going to take this week to just kind of unplug a bit, relax. I'll watch some hockey. I'll watch the Euro. Obviously, that's going to be a big part of my schedule. Go by the pool, maybe go for a couple hikes, but, you know, nothing crazy. Just going to relax because July is going to be really busy. July is going to get pretty crazy with the expansion draft, the entry draft, free agency. Who knows what the Flames are going to do. So I'm just going to lump around.
Well, listen, it sounds
for
to
lack
me like
of
you
a
got,
better word.
Yeah, lump around. Listen, it sounds to me like you got lots of time to download a reminder that the Athletic Hockey Show, Haley, it's 5 days a week. So maybe when you're taking that hike, you're taking Dom Luschishin, Craig Custance, and Sean Gentile with you. They're coming up, reminder, on Tuesday. And we think Burnside and LeBron, they do the two-man advantage edition on Wednesdays. We think that they might be lining up Katie Strang. We talked about the importance of that story earlier in the podcast. So certainly look for that to drop later this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Haley and I here on this edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. Follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Leave that rating and review. You know we appreciate that. If you're not a subscriber with us at The Athletic, annual subscriptions are available at $3.99 a month when you visit theathletic.com/hockeyshow.